Hey guys, it's Piano Cully. I am on the road again, alright? This week's episode is a great one with Rachel Wolfson, Matt Edgar in Austin, Texas. Before we get into it, I just want to tell y'all where I will be. Alright, July 25th, I'm in New York City at Gramercy Theater. July 26th, I'm in Stamford, Connecticut. July 30th, Atlanta, Georgia, The Punchline. And July 31st, I'm at Zany's Nashville. And you can find all of your tickets for my shows at pianocolly.com. Please subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/rampinuppod. All that's out of the way. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back to another episode of Ramping Up with Piano Cully
and Matt Taylor.
And today we are in Austin, Texas, and
I have some
very exciting guests.
Yeah, we were very fortunate enough to be here at the Creek and Cave Studio, and we've got two of our favorite people here in the studio with us today. Fiona, you want to
give it up for Rachel Wolfson and Matt Edgar?
Thank you
for having us.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
We love it. Dynamic duos. I mean, everyone probably knows who you are.
I'm pretty fucking famous.
We have some questions. Starting is always hard.
That's why we like calling it Ramping Up, because we kind of start out slow, but right. Then by the end we're really like taking that. Off.
Yeah. Oh, I get it.
So we'll start with just a good icebreaker.
And wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pun.
Right.
All right. If you found a dead body in a hotel room, what would you do?
I would search its pockets.
I was going to say, Rachel would get us an upgrade.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, we're getting the suite.
Hi, I'd like to complain.
I think our last guest won't leave.
Yeah. Yeah. I would, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Smart.
Yeah.
Like for money or ID?
For all of it, anything. Treasures and medication and...
Are you
drugs.
A true crime person?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love Dateline.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, I constantly find myself in situations or I'll notice my friends are in situations. I'll like, that's how a Dateline episode starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's pretty sick.
Why couldn't it be me? You know, all those questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have something. I feel like this is a little fucked up, but like I pray to God it's relatable. I'm obsessed with true crime, mm-hmm. but like I really only care if the person kind of looks like me.
That's not fucked up. I feel like a lot of victims do look like you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Then, yeah, like pretty, pretty and... white and no legs.
Yeah, but I don't go on runs, so there aren't many opportunities.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's not a lot of, I feel like, a lot of wheelchair murders.
Yeah, and I have complaints about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not inclusive enough.
Right.
I just realized that the two favorite things that you like watching on TV, you've combined in the latest thing that you watch. She likes true crime and obviously like Love Island.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're she's watching something called, what is
Love After Lockup.
Oh, yeah, the prison one. Yeah, I love that.
It's good.
It's
shit.
The worst,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Matt, I'm going to ask you, you hate this question. I don't care. I love it. What is the buffest celeb you think you could take?
Like you can like them,
uh-huh.
like
you yeah,
can
you don't
be
have
a
to
fan, whatever.
Have a
but like the biggest
that
guy,
I have a shot at,
yeah,
winning
up.
In combat.
Mm-hmm. Hands.
Wee Man.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a woman.
That's funny.
I don't know. You know, that kind of reminds me of how, like, back in the day when Justin Bieber was younger and more, like, you know, like, on the scene, like, everybody used to call him a pussy. All these guys were like, oh, this little pussy. So I'm like, Justin Bieber would rock most men.
Yeah.
He's in dancer shape.
He's athletic, yeah.
He could jump over you.
Oh, man. Getting beat up by Biebs would be tough.
Yeah, but I think he trains with Mayweather. He was training with Mayweather. Like, all these just, like, manly men that think that they could beat up Justin Bieber. It's like, no, he'd fuck you up, dude.
Also, he's an angry little dude.
Really?
And now he's angry. Yeah, every time I see him, he's mad. But they come after him.
Yeah.
They poke the bear.
It's crazy he got into golf. But we're not going to talk about golf on this pod, I promise.
That was the one rule.
Do you golf?
Yeah,
all the time. Oh, you love it.
Yeah, I'm obsessed. Those. I try not to bring it up because it's like one of those.
No.
Oh, thank God.
No. I like the disc golf.
The frisbee. See, I used to Long play Beach that a golf. Lot. I
That's
love that.
More approachable. I think golf is boring.
Pretentious.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like, why is this so expensive? For what? For who?
Socializing. Yeah. It's a networking sport.
Like, y'all are allowed to friends.
Yeah.
You don't need to.
It's a networking sport, so is pickleball.
Pickleball looks fun, though.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe. Does it? Mini tennis.
People are too serious about it. People that are that play pickleball, it's like they like ditch their friends to go play.
Yeah. That's my family now that they picked up tennis. I don't hear from them anymore.
It's a cult.
But at least it's tennis. You know, if it was pickleball,
the real thing.
All sports are cults.
Like, I feel like,
yeah,
pickleball is like when you have like bowling with bumpers.
Yeah.
It's like you're making it's a handicap.
Wait,
society loves it. So that's a win on my book.
Yeah. And then golf is all about handicap. So that's
true.
This makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then it's like you have like three tiers because you've got tennis, pickleball.
Yeah.
And then ping pong. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is also taken way too seriously. It's in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. It's in the Olympics.
So I don't know if pickleball is yet.
In the Olympics. I hope that never stops.
Oh, yeah.
Ray Gun.
Yeah.
Surfing.
Surfing's a sport.
Yeah.
Surfing is the coolest.
Yeah.
It is.
By far. Did you surf when you were in Cali? You did?
Yeah. And they, my high school had a surfing team. I wasn't on it because you had to wake up too early.
Yeah,
you gotta get up at like 5 a.m. It's freezing.
Were you like a bad kid in high school?
No, I was a good person. But I liked breaking things. I liked starting fires. I went through a shoplifting phase.
Like I was a good guy. Small animals, stuff like that.
No, hurting anything. I was a pyro.
Interesting.
I had a buddy, Jason. We would sleep over at his house every weekend. We'd sneak out and we'd start fires in the middle of the street and go hide in bushes and wait for cars to run them over.
Oh, that's fun.
We would also put things in the road and wait for cars to hit them. And for some reason, it was exhilarating. Just
the crunch.
That's
terrible.
I was straight edge. I didn't drink or smoke or anything. So that's how we got our socks off.
Everybody's got a vice.
Yeah.
Yours was property damage.
What ignited that vice?
What's that?
What ignited that
Because he was
vice.
Sober.
What ignited the vice?
Oh, stand-up
comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that you mean? That
the
putting
fire.
The fire. It was just...
It was something he could do
without
getting high.
I felt like when I was a little kid, when I lived with different parents, my mom and my stepdad, they were really strict. I couldn't do anything. The neighborhood was bad. It was a dangerous neighborhood, so I couldn't go anywhere. Then I moved with my dad and he gave me all the freedom. And once I had freedom from like 12 years old up, I was like, that's what I did with the freedom.
Interesting.
Yeah, I broke shit. I throw things at cars, steal golf carts.
That's fun.
That became a hobby, stealing golf carts.
That's pretty awesome though.
Yeah.
And it's still not, that's not Grand Theft Auto, is it?
Like
it doesn't ring the same charge. There's no way.
Steal?
I can't even tell you a lot. Yeah.
How do you think I got here?
There was a...
we keep one in the garage.
There was a senior citizen like basically like living like complex where it was like it almost looked like a golf course, but it's like a bunch of little houses for old people.
Oh, you were stealing from seniors?
Well, I found out there was a sewer from the freeway. Underneath the freeway, you could take the sewers and you open up and you're in this gated community.
Like a Ninja
Leisure,
Turtle?
Called Leisure World. And all it was just a bunch of golf carts that were supplied by the place. So I didn't feel like I was stealing from the old people. I was stealing from the place.
Yeah, you were stealing from corporate.
Yes, right.
Man. Nice. That's like fair.
Yeah. And so, yeah. Yeah.
It's so specific. I feel like it's not wrong.
Once I started
hanging out with girls.
Once I started meeting girls, all that went away.
Okay.
Yeah, I stopped. Started being fires. Gay.
Stopped stealing carts. Started stealing hearts.
Yep.
There we go.
What about you? How were you in high school?
I was not a good student, but I was cool. I played basketball.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Straight edge, too?
I mean, not really. I mean, I didn't start smoking weed until I tried weed in high school one time, but I didn't get high. And I didn't really drink, but I wasn't like actively trying to be straight edge.
Right. It's just like not that many situations you found yourself.
Well, my
in.
Parents just like kind of did the scare tactic on me where if I did any of that, I would be in like serious trouble. But I was a basketball player, played sports.
Okay. That leads me to like, so you're a basketball player, pretty normal kid, fairly good.
I wouldn't say it was normal. I had a lot of behavioral problems and I was like always in trouble. I went to like a religious school. So I was like problematic, I guess I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever get into legal trouble as a kid?
Not legal trouble, but I was always grounded or in trouble with my parents and they worked for the law. So I guess I wasn't technically legal trouble.
Yeah, legal trouble, but I didn't finish my fucking dinner.
Yeah, no, seriously. But yeah, I was not a perfect child by any means.
And are you you have a sister?
Yeah, I have a little sister. No. She's a judge. She followed in my parents' footsteps.
So. And you're a comedian. Mm-hmm. It was on fucking Jack.
So you're also
I also judge
people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except she makes a lot more money than I do.
How'd Jackass happen?
So I used to be a memer before I got into stand up. And when I started stand up, I was in 2016 or 2017. I can't remember because I looked back, it said 2017. So I'm not really sure at what point I started, 2016 or 2017. And then I did a show at the Laugh Factory. And they put up one of my clips. They put up my OJ Simpson joke. And I noticed after they posted that I got like a bunch of followers. I got like 15,000 followers and a bunch of bigger comedians started following me. And I think that's when Johnny Knoxville started following me. And he would post like funny videos on his page and I would always have the top comment the top joke or top comment. We just had like good online banter. And then one day in 2019, he sent me a message on Instagram and asked if he could call me to talk about something, a project or something. And he told me when I called him that they were doing like some kind of anniversary special for Jackass, like a 20th anniversary special. And would I want to come in for a meeting with him and the director, Jeff Tremaine? And so I went in for a meeting. And they basically were like, do you want to come play with us kind of thing? Like, that's how they phrased it. And then next thing I know, I'm like showing up for test shoots, auditioning for the movie.
How do you audition for that?
So basically they do like a couple test shoot days. And that's where they basically see how the chemistry of the cast is. And they make us do like stunts and
Like painful ones.
Yeah, for yeah. The which test? They and the one
just for the practice.
Yeah. Well, no. They ended up actually using a lot of the footage from the test shoot that we did in the movie, and I think that so they just like tested the chemistry of the cast and just like you know how well we did with each other, and they kept asking me to come back and shoot more stuff. So.
Were you still doing comedy?
Yeah, I started comedy before then. So this wasn't until 2019, and I was doing stand-up in like 2016, 2017.
Okay.
So I was a stand-up before.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is there any, how am I going to phrase this? I feel like I get so dumb when I start talking on air.
Me too.
But what was the hardest stunt you think you had to do on Jackass? Or is there one that like sticks out?
Probably the scorpion bit. That was intimidating. And well, also the tasers. But I think the scorpion hurt more than the tasers for sure. And but everything they asked me to do, I did, and I would like volunteer for stuff. So I just went with whatever.
Are there ever any things like he pitches that the people are just like, no, I'm not doing that? Like it's just like
yeah, there was someone who was like testing for the cast, and he ended up like leaving and not being asked to come back because he would refuse to do a bunch of stuff, and that's not very Jackass.
So. Yeah, I was watching you do all those stunts. I'm like, I would immediately just be like, no, actually, I'm good. I'm going to go ahead and walk off.
What's like so funny? I watched, which one was it?
Forever
yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen any Jackass. And I was like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
This is the craziest thing. And then like y'all had already been dating. When you got this, right? So Matt is like literally dropping her off to have a scorpion stinger fucking face. Yeah. Like,
I'll like, pick you up at 4, babe. Right.
Yeah. No, that literally was it.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, like to go back to all like my young mischief and starting fires, and I was just a big Jackass fan.
Yeah.
You know, me and my friends would launch each other off in shopping carts. So like getting to take her there, it almost was like, it's almost like a Jackass theme park when you get on set. When I drive, I would see the guys, like I would see Knox walk, and everybody's like limping, and they like, especially when I pick her up, like drop her off one thing, but at the end of the day, maybe I'd get there a little bit early and have to like sit and wait, you know. And I would see these guys, and they're all just beat up. Or
like I would go to the shoots one way, hair, makeup done, because like I would have my like makeup done and my hair done because they don't have like makeup on set or whatever, and they don't really have girl. They've never had a girl before. And then I would come back, and I would be like, hair's messed up, makeup, like paint on my face, just like dirty. Like
she had.
I would start one way and come back another way.
The one, the last stunt that you were, your those the, guys are the in the
ending.
The ending, right?
The milk.
Yeah, the milk, and then they're all being shot with what were you? Oh,
paintballs.
Yeah, paintballs.
When she came home that day. She had bruises like all over.
No, it was on the back. It was on my back because so it was like from my like butt down was all these like bruises.
Yeah.
It's pretty Jeez. Cool.
Yeah. The scorpion, you know, that's venom. Yeah. So like for like a week, like her chin would like pulsate. Like you could just see the like.
What?
Yeah. It would just like flex on its own. Like took a while for that to go away. Felt like
it wasn't
a few days.
It was I had like my lymph nodes were swollen.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And that was like because you were saying like it was like multiple takes. Like what you saw in the film wasn't
even like with the taser. I think we shot with like two or three different tasers, and we did a couple takes with that. And then with the scorpion, there was three different kinds of scorpions. And the one that hurt the most wasn't the one that was shown. Like they showed this big black one that was scarier looking than like the small one. If you see a small one, that one's going to hurt a lot. And the small one was that was so painful.
What
and you
even,
didn't even see it on there.
Like compared to like a bee sting, what's
the bee sting's nothing. Like, this is like, this is like, I don't know. I can't even describe how painful, like what the pain would feel like. Just like intense pain.
I think that's like the craziest shot of the movie is when you see the stinger going in her lip. It penetrates her
but
lip.
But again, that one wasn't even the one that hurt that bad. I mean, that one hurt.
And that's after you'd already done the other ones? Or they're just like, we'll see which...
They probably... I don't know if it was after... I think that was the first one. The one... But then they started bringing out, like, other scorpions. Like, there's, like, a smaller one.
So they used the burst egg, so the rest was right, because
the smaller one... The smaller one didn't... it probably didn't shoot as well since it was smaller. Even though that one
hurt. It didn't look as menacing as, like, a big one.
The bigger one is the shot that they used. But I got stung by all of them.
Is this all on the same day, too?
Yeah.
Dude, the thing that I was cracking up about, because, like, I mean, it's like a thing people know, like, women deal with pain pretty, like, well, like, pretty silently when it's bigger pain, I think. But, like, watching the mime one where
the silent game, the quiet game.
Yes, that was so funny. You were like, everyone else was like,
I think that was the thing that I think Jeff, the director, like I don't think he really likes the fact that I don't really react, but like I am on the inside, like going through my own turmoil and like, you know, mental, you know, like, you know, I'm going through my own mental breakdown inside. But that's the thing with women, you know, like even like, because when I worked in corporate America, or just like any woman anywhere, anytime, it's like, you know, we've been conditioned that be seen and not heard, you know, and like just kind of being emotional means you're crazy or complaining or a nuisance or a burden. So it's like, yeah, I just remember like even working corporate, like if I had like my period or if I was sick, like, you know, you just had to just deal with it and go back to work. And so for me, I think it's funny because I think it just shows how like how much these guys are pussy. No, they're not pussies. Yeah, they're just but I mean, what they're doing is crazy and painful. And, you know, but with me, I think. I am hurt. I am going through my own thing, but I'm just not gonna like. To me, to show it would be inauthentic. Like to be like to unless perform. They have me do something that I'm like, this is like, it's so painful that I can't. That I it garners a physical response. But again, it's like that. Getting bit in the lip by a scorpion. If I'm gonna stay quiet or like lick tasers, you know, it's like how much. How much pain can I handle where, you know, but I also think it's, you know, that's like the double standard too, because I think when you see women in pain, there's a line you're writing where it doesn't, it's not funny. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's, I think there is a way that it can be funny as long as I'm still having a good, not a good time, but I'm like, I'm not like in agony, I guess. Whereas like when you, I like when people fall, like you know, guys, when they get hurt, I think it's hilarious.
I was wondering about that because I was like, you never see you get like sidelined by somebody dressed up like a football player. You're just getting like,
well,
speared.
Yeah, because that's the like, line. That's the double standard. It's like that would, you know, that would not be as funny as like, one of the guys, it happening to the guys.
Just like the nudity, like watching those guys, seeing Steve-O naked is always funny.
It's hilarious, but you see, like, if you got naked, that's
not funny. It's
serious.
They're getting turned on.
It's like, you know? Right, like, guys, there's a crime happening, I think.
No, and even with the, like, taser and, like, the scorpion, like, there's still guys who send me, like, weird DMs about it. Like, this is what I jerk off to. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter what a woman
does.
You know,
got
like,
that DM I sent you.
Yeah. Oh, so you did see it.
You never responded.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's funny. I know, like, we're friends, but, like, watching it, I was so concerned for you.
That's what
like, I was so nervous. But, like, the way they showed your parts of it, It's like, yeah, I was like, oh, she's fucking got the shit in the bag. you know, and you were so cool, calm, and collected. I was like, and being the only woman on
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you rep women really well.
Like, it Thank was you. Really badass.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because it's also like, okay, how far can we go with her where, like, what's it going to take for her to give, like, a... I mean, the scorpion, I did react. Like, I was scared and I was visibly like, ooh, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that's what... That was the whole scene. That's what made the whole scene get is, like, it was, like, you know.
Yeah, I did. I was, like, you know, I did...
It's crawling on her chest.
Yeah, and I'm like, can someone... Like, I literally had to yell consent for one of them to, like... You know, but which speaks to the time that we were shooting in, because this was like when Me Too was happening and they like when we were shooting Jackass, when we were doing like the test shoots, they had like a sexual harassment training. Like there was like they start on all the sets. They started having like an HR person come and give like a sexual harassment spiel, which I don't think Jackass has ever.
That's had so to funny to think of that Jackass. Before.
but it's like that I had never shot a movie before. So that to me is like, oh, this is just like normal protocol, but it's also hilarious because I'm the only one who would get.
Right. They're only talking about me.
Right.
Yeah.
I am right here.
And then like literally the next thing Everybody I know, next thing I know, I'm you. Watching, I'm, they're all naked in front of me. So I'm like, yeah, this is, totally normal.
Yeah.
Like how much can you truly enforce HR stuff?
On Jackass.
Yeah.
They're just going through the motions. It's like, you're going to see a bunch of dicks.
Yeah. But like, yeah.
As long as.
They want you to, you know, keep your dick out when we're filming.
Yeah.
But put
yeah.
it, you know.
Classic.
Yeah. What was the one, the beehive?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was wild.
That was yeah. a crazy
There's a really
thing.
Funny part of that scene that I think of more than that, more than the actual like what. Steve-O was doing was when it was Jasper and I forget who was in between him and Poopies. And Poopies, they're just standing there. It's like it's almost like they're just filming them and they're literally waiting. They weren't doing anything. And Poopies is like, oh my God.
Oh
my God.
The bees.
And the bees start he's like starts getting scared yeah. and Jasper starts laughing at him. I don't know why. That cracks me up like all the time.
Like the comparison of like Steve-O with bees all over his dick and there's one bee around this guy.
Poopies, yeah, yeah.
Honestly, I got stung by a bee in Hawaii and I think I'm like desensitized from
there it is.
Sorry, I had to.
That stung.
From because I was like, oh, this kind of just doesn't feel that bad. Or maybe I just didn't get, maybe I don't know. I just, I like, I saw the stinger. I took it out. It was like swollen
I
for
think
2 days.
After a scorpion on your face, nothing's going to feel that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, so there was, so in the Quiet Game, they had Poopies get bit by the snake. And initially they pitched that to me. And I said, yeah. And then they thought about it some more. And I think they didn't want to like do anything that could fuck up my face. They didn't mind with Poopies because his face is already fucked up. I'm just kidding. It's fine. And
it's fine.
It is. And but then they like thought about it. But I was down. I told them I would do it. You know, I that would have freaked me the fuck out. That I would have been like, I would have been.
Yeah.
Very scared, visibly scared.
Yeah, there's no, I don't think I would have been able to get myself to do any of the stuff. I think I was like, okay, I do not have the mental fortitude to fucking like calm down and allow this to happen.
I guess for me, it's like, as long as like I can't die, then I'm like, what's the worst? You know, that could happen because.
Right. It's like a roller coaster.
Well,
you strap in.
Yeah. I mean, like, I like scars and I don't mind like bruises or injuries. I guess that's what makes me.
I think it's like the anticipation that would freak me out.
Yeah.
Like when you're sitting on that, when you're sitting on the chair with Pontius, when you're like with the scorpion, that part.
Yeah. The pain is like, that's just like temporary, you know.
Painted,
but residuals last forever.
It's crazy because like I watched that from like a stance. I'm like, what stunt would I be willing to do and like watching Jackass Forever, I'm like, I don't know, maybe the off ramp part.
If see, I those are scary. All that stuff is scary because you can break bones and stuff.
Yeah. I think I would have done good at surfing Zackass down the in the desert with the lube. That looked fun. Like, I feel like I could have like had.
I could barrel roll. No, dude. Just those, right.
See, that stuff like freaks me out because, you know, like even if you break a bone, whatever, but like you can't work out, you know, you can't participate in other things necessarily because like an injury like that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it would, that would be.
Well, I mean, as soon as you're in the air. As soon as you're launched, whatever happens after that. I mean, there's
and
no,
they want
like,
you to get hurt. That's the thing. Well, like, the more you get hurt, you know, the funnier.
An interesting thing. So Dave England is, you know, Dave England was like a snowboarder dude that, you know, he got really good at falling. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it became like an art for him, like the art of making it look brutal. In the first Jackass movie, the opening scene is this giant shopping cart going down this hill and the whole cast is in it. And it's ironic because they're always just launching themselves in regular shopping carts. But once they get the big budget movie, the first thing, I mean, they used the budget so well. But Dave was telling me that they shot that twice. The first time he jumps off as it's going full speed, he jumps off on the asphalt. And he falls and he's looking it back. He's watching it back and it just didn't look good. It looked too safe. He just kind of rolled and that was fine. So he's like, on the next one, he knew he would do it where it would be brutal and he fucked himself up. Like he took the spill bad just for it to look cool.
There's
artistry in it.
Something so interesting. Like, I'm a disabled person. So I do think able-bodied people are insane. Like, y'all do like the most like dangerous, crazy things, and now it's like I can like stand, but if I'm injured in addition to my shit in any capacity, I'm like Stephen Hawking.
I think you mean white people.
What? You're totally fucking
able-bodied
right.
White people.
Yeah, like
it's
y'all
like life's
love
too easy.
It.
We gotta
like,
do
yeah,
something
we're not scared
dangerous.
Enough. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah,
it's a privilege.
Like, the whole like I'll live forever mentality. I used to have that. That is gone. You know what I mean? And so Jackass just cracks me up because like I'm watching, I'm like, oh my god, are they bruising their fucking hip bone? Like,
a lot worse than that.
I know. I'm like I fucked my shit up falling into water.
Yeah, what they do with the pain they inflict on themselves and their penises and just, you know, like
the Knoxville getting hit by the bull.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was the most brutal.
I watched it. I didn't realize it was slow-mo. He like bounces his head off the ground.
He's snoring.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Concussion.
I think that was like the craziest thing ever.
But like end of fuck with your head like that. Nah. Like that's dangerous.
I've seen everything that Jackass has ever done. I think that's the craziest thing. That and in 4.5, which is like after the movies, there's like a what would you call that? It's like
docu-style.
It's like a docu-style, like,
but it has stunts and stuff that didn't make the movie.
Yeah, one of the stunts was like a parachuting thing, and Knoxville's parachute like didn't deploy right, and he had to use the
emergency
chute. But it was like, it looked crazy. Like, he almost died, like, free-falling.
Do you think if you were disabled, like, in a similar way to me, like, you'd still want to...
Yeah.
You do? Mm-hmm. I believe that.
Yeah, we got to put you
I'm
in
like,
the shopping
I'm already,
cart.
You know, I'm...
You're what? Like, why the fuck not?
Yeah.
If the money was right. I guess that's fair. But you had a thing with Jackass, they started off kind of ma and pop, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like they were doing that for no money at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just for the thrill.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, they're like skater dudes. Like Knoxville is like trying to be an actor and do the Hollywood thing. But like all those other guys, Steve-O was a clown. Danger Aaron and England were snowboarders.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what Pontius was up to.
Skater.
Chris Pontius was a skater? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then he wrote for Big Brother magazine.
Right. So Big Brother, you know what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah,
like
yeah. So
show?
That is a big part. CKY and Big Brother. Jackass
Wee Man
is just,
was a skater.
Yeah. Yeah, Wee Man's a skater.
Bam was a skater.
Bam's a pretty good skater.
Yeah. He still skates.
Still does. Mm-hmm. I still see clips of him shredding right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know how Preston started. Maybe he.
I don't know. That's an interesting thing. Like, how did they find these guys?
They were all connected.
They're CKY. They were all friends of, Jackass is just like the love child of CKY and Big Brother.
Yeah.
And you put like Spike Jonze in there. He's like this great filmmaker, producer type. You know, it just got, he organized it, you know. Knoxville's a great leader. Like that guy.
Yeah.
He's like great at, you know, commanding the troops.
I feel like Chris Pontius is the one that I see. He's always like, he's never like, seems like he's in a, has a bad mood or like.
Oh, he's the best. We get to spend, I've spent some quality time with Pontius and his wife and his son Axe. And we actually went to Hawaii together earlier this year and did stand up shows with him. We got to open for him. He was headlining. And I've just become really close with them independently from like after shooting the movie. Mm. And I love them so much. And Pontius is just such a, he's such a light. He's such a good storyteller and, you know, just a positive person. Like I never really see him in like a bad mood. I'm sure he, you know, has his moments, but I've never seen that. And he's so funny. Yeah. And I guess like he's probably one of my favorite people to watch perform when he does stand up because he's just so likable and his stories are very funny. And yeah,
he's also one of those guys that like there's like no ego to him. He's literally just this even keel. Like,
just always smiling. You know what? And having a good time.
Honestly, he's more of a father. Like he's a family guy. Like when like him and May, his wife, their whole life revolves around their son. And it's so adorable.
Yeah, they just make this a big like playground for him.
Life is a playground. And everything's like, see this accent?
And like their son is like so good with people. Like he's not afraid to talk to people. He's not shy. He's just like a very well-adjusted kid.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because
that's crazy.
You know, that's party boy. And you have this idea of what he'd be like, but he's such just a great
I can't wait
dude.
Till he figures out what his dad is. You know what I mean?
Cool.
Like
what his
Jackass
dad is.
Yeah. Like, cause like he's like 5 years old because he was a pandemic baby. Like his mom was breastfeeding him on the set of Jackass.
That's crazy.
So he was born like right as we were shooting the movie.
Yeah.
Wait, how many cast members have kids?
Knoxville, Dave. Knoxville, Dave, Pontius, and obviously Bam has a son. The only ones, Aaron has a daughter. Steve-O and Wee Man and Preston are the only ones who don't.
Steve-O got clipped.
Have kids.
On the show?
He on his own special. He got a special where he did the stunt where he got a vasectomy.
On
stage?
He does like these one-man shows where, or like he'll like go on tour and part of his show is like having like videos play behind him and he kind of does his like material. Anyways, he showed that he had a double vasectomy.
And then rode a horse.
Yeah.
Like an hour later.
Okay.
That was the stunt.
Yeah.
And it shows the vasectomy.
With all the crazy like ball and dick smashing they do in that show, I feel like a vasectomy is a waste of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would think. Like, but I've seen Aaron get
the
like
the fact that they can all reproduce as well.
Yeah, Aaron, his balls have been destroyed. Like and like he had a beautiful baby daughter after that.
Like the pogo stick. God's like plan. Watching that back.
Yeah.
No. Oh man.
Oh my God. Okay. So I'm gonna talk about your start in comedy.
Oh.
And you started in LA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, 2007.
Oh.
With your boy.
My boy.
With Tony.
Hell yeah.
Started within like a week of each other. I went to the Comedy Store one day. And I just signed up. And next thing I know, like a month later, they gave me a job. I was like a door guy at the Comedy Store.
What made you like want to start though? Like,
want to start stand up?
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I knew I was going to do even when I was a kid. I mean, I found when I was eight, my stepdad's cousin gave him a Sinbad cassette tape.
Nice.
And I heard that in the car And I was like, what is this? This is a grown up up here goofing off, making all these other grown ups laugh. My stepdad's laughing, listening. And then Seinfeld came out and you'd see him doing stand up in the early, in like the first season, it would show him doing stand up. Mm-hmm. And that always just resonated more than the show. And so when, as I got older, I started buying CDs, like Chris Rock was my favorite. Like I had Bring the Pain and Bigger and Blacker. Dane Cook comes out. That's the first comedian I could really relate to as a person. Mm-hmm. And then, as soon as I graduated high school, I started taking improv classes at the Groundlings like the next week.
Oh, wow.
And then that just like led to me starting open mics and stuff. And it was never, I was never not going to do stand up. I always thought I was
like
made
for
it.
That was always the
always.
Goal.
It was just a matter of starting.
And did you have like a job before you did stand up?
I worked at a pizza place in Long Beach. Nice. Long Beach. Yeah, I'm from Long Beach, California.
Slingin's us.
I was, what was the place called? Fuck, three something. I can't even remember what it was called. But anyways, I was working there and at the Comedy Store at the same time. And then I started getting all my shifts at the pizza place covered. And finally, the boss that was there was a really cool guy, supportive. Thought it was cool that I was trying stand up.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, hey, man, maybe you ought to just, you know, go full into that. Like, you don't need this place. You want to work at a pizza place. He's just a cool dude. That's
nice.
Yeah. He just thought it was cool that I got out, you know?
Oh.
And then, yeah, I mean, it was super, I wasn't natural. I mean, I was like, you know, I wasn't like Cam or nothing. It was, I was a natural public speaker always. My dad's a politician. He always was really good at, I would watch him do it. I'd watch him speak publicly and like was so comfortable, and I always just had that. But the writing, the timing, that was all learned through this.
That's an interesting thing to talk about. It's like the different, there are comedians where it's like they're mostly vibes, not a lot of writing. You
it's
know
a skill.
What I mean?
I mean,
and it works for mm-hmm. them. Or like mm-hmm. the natural versus the grinder.
I think that
know?
The hardest part of all of it for me personally was learning to write. I think everybody has to learn to write for themselves. And it's like, there's not one way. Some people.
In your own voice. Too,
in your, I mean, which finding
your
voice is like that's the path.
Yeah.
But once you do that, then you have to learn how to write for it. Mm-hmm. There's like multiple mountains you have to climb to get good.
Well, and then it's like once you figure that out, your next thing is like, can you be present on stage?
Comfort.
And let go of the mm-hmm. writing a little bit and mm-hmm. talk to people if they're talking to you. Or
the
you
good
know.
Thing about that part, though, is I think that's always being worked on in the background because you're talking about being comfortable. So like as long as you're practicing, you're getting comfortable. You could practice on the things you need to focus on, but all the while the comfort is working on itself out.
Yeah.
You know, but I think also, and now we live in this, you know, I started stand up before social media was a thing. Twitter wasn't real. Twitter didn't start yet. So now I think the other layer of it is marketing. If you want to have a career,
Golly.
I was always waiting to get on the Tonight Show or Premium Blend or that's now how it started. HBO was the only game in town.
07?
Oh my God.
What's that?
Comedy Central reigned supreme back then.
Yeah, but that's also around the time they stopped stand-up. Like they slowly started taking away the stand-up comedy from that channel. And then now it's just like I see these kids and they're posting like a clip and it goes viral and it may be good for a clip, but I mean, you're up there for an hour and you're selling tickets and you got to put on an entire show. You have to carry a whole show.
Yeah.
I just don't think like you could just do that in the first few years. Anybody could do it, but to do it.
That's the misconception. Yeah. It's like so easy for anyone to like be kind of famous now, which is like cool.
Yeah.
If you have the work and material to back it up, but sometimes someone's biggest downfall can be popping too soon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There'd be times where I'm doing a show and some kid who's on the show would come up to me and be like, man, you know, with all the respect and all the praise and asking me questions, how do you get so comfortable? How do you, whatever the questions are. And I think it's just some kid, you know, you just got to keep practicing. And then he'll follow me and I look and he's got like 300,000 followers.
Right.
And it's like, dude, can I open for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I feel like happened to me is I got my first pop, you know, when Jackass came out. I was only 3 years into, 2.5, 3 years into stand-up. And here I am, you know, headlining and doing all these things that I just don't have the time or the experience or, mm-hmm. you know, I just am publicly figuring it out. And you know, I wouldn't like recommend my path to anyone, but it is my path, so I have to own it. And just kind of like now that I'm like seven, eight years in, I'm still figuring out, you know, how to
which that's be a nothing comedian.
Exactly.
That's
really yeah, nothing. You're I mean, still under 10 years.
We have the same fucking experience.
Yeah.
I think that I mean stand-up comedy.
I think you're more prepared than I am in terms of we're in the same place, but I think you're headlining more well than I.
Well, also like the fan bases that you guys have acquired are completely different. Yours is a stand-up comedy fan base. They come out for shows. Jackass doesn't do that.
They're like, what is this? Is she going to stage like,
right. Do a back exactly.
Benson Boone.
But stand-up is the only art form that you only practice while you do it. So it does take a long time. It's 7-8 years. I was just telling you the other day, like my first good joke that I would consider was a good joke came 7 years into stand-up. I remember.
And the other thing is like when I was filming Jackass, this was during the pandemic. So it's not like after I shot, I could go, you know, there were some shows because we shot LA for so too. Long, you know, but like, you know, stand-up wasn't happening when we were doing this. So it's just, you know, it's just been an interesting, you know,
but I think you get what you need. Like some people just work better. We all learn differently anyways. So like for Rachel, it had to be, she has to learn. It's like, you know, that's how I learned to swim is my stepdad threw me in the deep end. You know what I mean? That's how, what's that? and, but for me, it's like, I needed to, bomb in oblivion for a decade. You know what I mean? Where it didn't matter.
Yours is like, but you got to bomb in like
the Comedy Store,
or like just not
privately.
Privately. Like there wasn't when you were coming up. There wasn't like so. You know, they're not
very
exactly.
True.
Whereas like mine is just, you know, there's
and they just take
people
it.
Who saw me and they're on Reddit talking about how I'm a shitty comedian. And it's like, of course, I'm supposed to be a shitty comedian. I've been doing this for literally 3 years.
Mm-hmm. I never wanted people. To this whole time, I didn't want any kind of popularity because I knew I was like learning. So like, you know, the first 10 years, I didn't want anybody to see that, you know, even up to 15 years, I would say somewhere around 14, 15 years, it's like getting consistent. Like, I don't worry about it. I'm not, there's no stage fright. There's nothing. It's just another spot.
But like, that is a real timeline. Like that's like for real. And I think, like the internet and the short attention spans and all that has really like fucked with people's audience members.
Totally. Yeah, babe.
I'm doing the math. If I started at 29, it doesn't make sense that that means I've only been doing it for 6 years.
No. You're.
Oh wait, I'm 38. I thought I was 35 for a second.
Yeah. I think we're really close because I started at 30 and I'm about to turn 38.
Yeah.
So I think you might be 1 year older than
me. But but then I'm like a year and a half, 2 years. I wasn't doing it the way. Cause once I started, I never stopped unless the pandemic happened. Yeah. I forgot how old that's the second time I forgot. And I'm not even high. I just forget how old I am.
Yeah, I think it's just like, you learn the way that it's like tailored made for you. It's almost like in the stars. You can't help it. You're supposed to pop off on a show where everybody shows up for you. You know what I mean? You're supposed to be popular and outside of stand up and have to go that way. Like I think it's like in the end when you look back, like I do, I know I do. At 18 years, I'm so glad I didn't make it.
Yeah.
Because didn't have what it took to sustain it. And also I'm a perfectionist. So like, I didn't want people to see the developing. People used to say that, like, no, people want to see the rise. They want to see you. No, I don't want them to see that. Mm. It's just like if I want to be a bodybuilder, I'm not going to show them me now.
No, I think that's actually more relatable. I think I agree with that. I think real comedy fans like to see the evolution of a comedian because they're going to be curious anyways. Like, where did they start?
Now it's all meta. because like podcasting and Mark Maron and everybody talking about the inner workings of stand up. Yeah. So just like people
even,
like
even like sports, when you like hear about when someone's coming up through like the college and the pro, like, you know, they follow them in high school and see where they get, you know, to like where they end up in college. And then when they get drafted, like, I think that real, like there are real fans who like to see the journey.
Yeah. You know, it's like similar, sure, like bands. When you discover a band, yeah, you're like, I've been watching them since they were playing this. Exactly. Little,
I'm not saying that they don't. I know that they do. I don't want them to see it.
Yeah.
I'd rather come out of nowhere and be like, where have you been?
He's so good. Is he new?
I like it because they can be like, I remember when, you know, and then it's like people who ever doubted me.
No, I think like the feeling I get now when people see my stand up for the first time is like the feeling I've always wanted, mm-hmm, where it was like, how long have you been doing it? Like, how old are you? It's like they're seeing the tip of the iceberg.
And comedy is crazy because there's people that stay in that scene with zero success and clearly never get better, but just are psychotically in love with, mm-hmm, the art form.
Yeah.
Like the open micers are just like, stay where they are, mm-hmm, and just do it for the love of the game.
I think there's something about moving that rattles the cage and makes you like grow and like, I mean, my life before I moved to Austin was the same. I was a paid regular at the Comedy Store. I'd get spots there, a couple of improv spots every now and then, do the things around there, be a good feature, you know, whatever. It wasn't until I moved here 2 years ago where I'm like, it's so much easier. Make a living off of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't have that in LA. Mm-hmm. Like, I work all the time now. I just think like moving switches something up. Maybe not staying in the scene where you started. Because I think I was always looked at as a child. I was always looked at as like a young person. And no matter how old I got, no matter better I got, I thought like everybody had seen me suck for so long that they kind of gave up. When I come here, I'm one of the older guys in the scene. And so like they don't even know. These kids don't even know how bad I was. I was horrible. I was like the worst door guy. They used to be like, the host used to go, when it was my turn to go on for the door guy spots, he would be like, all right, everyone, we call this the bathroom break.
Oh, God.
Shout out Ryan O'Neill.
Oh, my God.
They're like fucking mean, dude. And like this guy is like, don't even worry. Don't even pretend to laugh. Just, it's okay. Only 3 minutes. He'll
this
be gone.
This leads me to a question we always ask. And I want both the elves answers. Worst bomb story you have.
I've actually been saying this on stage lately. It's like my newest joke.
Nice.
One night early on for my door guy spot at the Comedy Store, I was going on and I'm bombing as usual. And there's this guy in the front row that everything I would say, he would scoff. He was like, like everything. Like about the fourth scoff, I'm like, I lose my shit. Like, what's your fucking problem? Mind you, nobody could see the scoff. Maniac. Like, you think this is easy? He's like, no. I'm like, you think you could do this? Like, I didn't say that. I'm like, well, why don't you try it then? He's like, okay. And he goes up. I give him the mic. And he proceeds to destroy.
And that guy's name was Shane Gillis.
Yeah, young Shane Gillis origin story. No, this guy would just
crush it.
This guy has, wherever this guy is now, he has not forgotten. This is like a great story that he could tell anybody that, one night this comedian called me on stage and I fucking killed it.
Bro, this story has gotten this man laid.
Yeah. Probably that night for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was brutal.
Fuck,
I cried.
You're like, I'm going to prove a fucking point right now.
Yeah, dude.
You think this shit is easy?
Yeah, you think this is easy? And mind you, the whole audience is like, what is this guy's fucking problem? He's already sucked this whole time.
You should have sat right where he was and just.
I sat on the side and I couldn't believe he was killing. I was so defeated. And then he got the light, starts running the light. He's doing so well.
Yeah.
And he's like, what do I do? And I'm like, I'll take it. All right, everybody, good night.
Nothing left.
You're all right, that's my time.
Yeah.
And his.
That's our time.
That's our time.
I can pick out, like, I feel like I bomb a lot, but I guess one that stuck out was I was doing a show at Sunset Strip. The booker booked this show called Quarter Slots. And It's where three comics go up and do 20 minutes.
Three do 20.
25 minutes, quarter.
Right.
And the show before, since there was such little tickets sold for that show, they just like didn't tell the show before that they're going to just start a new show. They were just going to roll it over kind of thing.
Oh, my God.
And so I was supposed to go up first. And the booker hates when the lineups, for whatever reason, this booker doesn't like when lineups change, make adjustments. But that's just like how comedy works. Yeah. You should be. It literally says on the Comedy Store lineup, lineups are subject to change because, you know, you have to be able to adjust. But for whatever reason,
it's live.
I think it's a control. I think it's like a control thing for them. And so I even had like a thing earlier in the week where I asked if I could go up earlier in a different lineup because I had just found out that my cat was diagnosed with a tumor. And so I was out all day working, doing stuff, and I wanted to get home to my cat and this booker wouldn't adjust the lineups or whatever. And you know how people can be in comedy. So on this particular show, I was supposed to go up first. Next thing I know, I get there, I've been switched because the comic before me wanted to go up earlier because they were tired. So for whatever reason, I got pushed back and I thought it was because the comic had to go to another spot, but they were just tired, but they get off stage and like, oh, I asked to go up early because I'm tired, but don't worry, I'm going to stay and watch your set. And I'm like, I am literally about to bomb so hard because right as I get on stage, there was the mass exodus of the people from before because they realize, oh, they're switching it up on us. This is another show.
Yeah.
And so I get out there. There's four people in the audience at Sunset Strip. This is a music hall.
It's the biggest room, tall ceilings.
There's literally four people. It's two on one side, two on the other. It looks like a split for like a bowling, you know, whatever the teeth, 7-10 whatever.
Yeah. Split.
And so I'm just standing up there and I'm like, okay, wow, I just have to be up here for 25 minutes. And so I don't do material. Like I'm not going to give these people material. This is insane. Like I have to acknowledge how ridiculous this is. Like, and so I just start making fun of the situation. I'm just like, you know, doing what I can. I think at one point I do a Q&A. Like it's like, I shouldn't even be using a microphone at this point. I should just be like getting on their level because the stage is so high.
It's
just the worst situation ever. I guess the booker in the back was like, why doesn't she just go into her material? And it's like, I'm literally doing what any comic would do, which is make fun of how ridiculous this situation is.
I went off on that booker. I was like, why don't you have an audience?
You're the booker.
The booker said it to me, of all people.
Yeah, she was like in the back.
Why doesn't she just
shit.
Do material?
Oh,
like,
cute.
Like, there's four people in the audience.
I'm the reason why the show is ruined. You know what I mean?
And so, have you ever done comedy? Do you even know how it works?
No, this person has no idea what they're doing. And so I mean, it was just one of those where it's like, it doesn't matter even if I bomb because this who cares, you know, but it's like this. And then I guess I've called Matt crying multiple times but now it's like it hurts less and less. But there was a mic I did when I was in LA at the Lyric Hyperion. And it was like the Lyric Hyperion's like a alt comedy type venue. So you have all the like really, really smart comedians, you know, the ones that are just like so smart, you know, and really good. But I went up and it was just like dead silent. Like they didn't want to laugh at me. It was nothing. Like I was like actually embarrassed, you know, and I get off stage and I just had the biggest breakdown in my car. I was like crying hysterically. But yeah.
And like not to like bring this up as like an excuse or anything, but like there is you're attractive. Attractive people doing comedy, you gotta fight
especially
harder.
To them because they're just like, you know, ugly.
Don't like attractive people.
I did a spot last week that was going well, and then I made some jokes, like I had some racial jokes, which are fine jokes, they work fine, but I watched everybody look around and I was like, finally, I was like, you guys could laugh, and then they kind of laughed a little bit, but then I got off and one of the guys came up to me. He was like, I'm so glad you said we could laugh because when you said that, I felt like I couldn't. like before you said and that's like the feeling I got. Like they felt like they couldn't laugh.
I relate to that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you mean you want to laugh. This would trigger laugh, but you think that if you laugh, it makes you look away.
Yeah.
Like, and so you can't.
Or have you seen like couples that come to a comedy show and they're like looking at each other? Like, if you laugh at this, do I have to be
cheating?
Right. Right.
You're only laughing because you think she's hot.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Right. That sucks. But
I feel like I avoided the people not liking you because you're attractive because I'm in a wheelchair and it like
cancels it out.
It makes me approachable again. Well, not that I'm super attractive, sorry. That you are. Off weird,
I think I try to just talk about my mental illness with like my personality disorder. Like, don't worry, you guys. I'm ugly on the inside. Like, this is just a shell of who I am.
Yeah. You know. I love your clip of when that lady or that girl in the audience, you know what I'm talking about, right?
What a brave soul.
That's what you're talking about.
I was on shrooms. Okay. Well,
don't get us demonetized.
I don't do shrooms, but I've done them a couple times. And I was on shrooms, but I was kind of the only comedian on shrooms this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing my, it's like a private gig.
Yeah.
So it's like 45 people maybe. And there's no stage. So I'm fucking knee to knee with these people in the front. You know what I mean? We're all sitting. And the shrooms start hitting while I'm on stage. And I'm doing really well. And I'm like, I'm going to do a joke. Okay. But the joke is anti, like I'm not like applauding it, but it's a really good joke and it crushes. But there's this one girl sitting right here, like we are staring at each other. I can smell her breath, you know what I mean? And she is like scoffing, like very much like as if I've like
her.
Yeah. And her husband is sitting right next to her, losing his shit. He's laughing so hard, and she's pissed. And because of my shrooms, I need everyone to like me. And I was like, oh, you didn't like that? And I tried to, like, get her on my side, nothing I said. And I was like, honestly, kind of badass for you to be publicly mean to someone in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And you're like,
I like that. And she was like,
still nothing.
And you say, like, usually people like kind of give it up a little bit more because I'm in a wheelchair, but you just don't give a fuck.
Yeah. And then after the show, like the whole time, I mean, she was rude to Matt when he was on stage. Like,
you went up before?
Right before me. So it was just like not whatever. And then after the show, the funniest thing, I was worried I had, like, insulted her by bringing up. I think she was more mad that I was, like, talking about men in that way. Oh, like, wow. It was the opposite of what the internet thought was happening. Because I got shit on a lot. It went really viral. And everyone was like, how dare you talk about. And I'm like, I was talking about my.
Right.
So, like, sorry, too much. We're gonna have to bleep that word out every time. But I asked, and everyone there was like, "That they know her and they hate her."
Oh wow! Yeah, she's just like a random audience member.
Oh wait, they know her?
Yeah, it was like a group
of
people.
Apparently, she doesn't take comedy well.
Why does she keep coming?
Well, she was married to someone that's like good friends with all of them.
Oh wow!
And she like was known for being kind of a party pooper. Hate is a strong word. I mean hate, but they were like, yeah, she's the worst with this stuff. She doesn't laugh at anything.
I hope she sees this clip.
Lucy, I know she saw the other one.
Oh, her face.
Did she comment?
There's no way she didn't see it because people from that show were like commenting on it.
Yeah.
Someone was like, I went to college with this girl and she's a fucking bitch.
Yeah. Oh, then she definitely saw it.
Yeah. Shout out Movie Ruiners. Oh, got it right here. They were the ones, they booked a private event and it was, they were a lot of fun.
It's not for everyone.
Golly.
You know? Like,
don't sit in the front fucking row, dude. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, she was front and center. Yeah. And I remember being up there, I'm like, gosh, she doesn't like any of this.
Oh, that's
And
so
it's like, funny. You know, once you find that person, you're like, I can't look at anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't focus on anything else.
Clearly go over your head.
Well, I find like when, like Rachel's stuff or talking about like, abuse or mental illness or disability, like all of that. Well, I guess, yeah, all of that. Like, people tend to want to like tighten up, close up initially,
or get sad for a second,
which is crazy to me because I feel like comedy, I don't know, this isn't like the purpose of it, but in my mind, it's like a thing that brings us all together where we can acknowledge these things. And it's really important for the growth of everyone. Yeah.
I think that's how most people look at it. But I think that there are people that take themselves too seriously. And also people think that like it makes them a better person to not laugh. It's
virtue signaling bullshit. Mm-hmm.
It is. That's always for lack of actually being a good person. Right. People that actually do those are usually the people that have never done anything for anyone. And that's the most that they get.
It's also like, how do you come to a comedy show with that kind of energy? Right. You know what I mean?
Well, it sounds like she was dragged there. Like, you know,
yeah.
No, that's the worst.
But
it was like their Christmas party in the kind of thing. So
yeah.
A lot of ugly Christmas sweaters in the crowd.
Yeah. Oh,
man. Well,
yeah.
I mean, I've gone through it all like that. I've been booed. I got booed on stage in front of like, was it like 2,000 people?
Ooh.
Yeah. I said I used to do only Mexican rooms, not only, but a lot. And so I had acquired all these Mexican jokes and I said something in Minneapolis. I said, it wasn't even a bad joke, nothing derogatory against Mexicans or anything. It was just in reference to, and the whole theater just starts booing me. And then afterwards, I'm at a bar and the guy from the stupid, I don't even give a fuck. I don't know his name. I don't care. I hate this fucking guy. But he wrote the movie 40 Days and 40 Nights. It's like some rom-com stupid movie. Yeah. Sucks. He came up to me in the bar. He's like, you know, I was going to have a few more drinks before I told you this. But it's one thing to not be funny, but to be racist, it's kind of despicable. And he has such a smug, like, he looks like he smells, like, his face was just the fucking worst. Prius. Despicable. His face looked like a Prius.
Oh, God.
And
my ex drove a Prius.
Yeah, and it was just like.
Despicable me.
Yeah.
Good movie.
Yeah, I'll never forget it. But that was that actually probably the worst technical bomb because I had thousands of people who hated me.
For something that wasn't even. I hadn't had one in forever. And on Rodney's tour. It was like a 4,000-seater arena. Mm. Came out hot, had them, and then just slowly lost them.
What do you think happened?
I don't know.
Was like, there a joke that you could tell?
It just turned like right in the middle, and like they just suddenly, you could feel them just not like me or just not. I mean, they're also still coming in and stuff, but like
they weren't ready
end,
for it.
Well, at the end, like. They stop laughing and like I hit a punchline, gets nothing, and it's quiet, 4,000 people. And this guy just like stands up and goes, next line.
Yeah.
And everybody dies laughing. And I'm like, God, that hurts.
I did the Vic Theater. I opened for this band called Guster on opening day of the Chicago
Cubs. I thought that's
Cubs.
The one you just said.
No, that was a different, that was the same tour. That was a different show. But this was the first show of the tour. Jeff Garland is on the show. It's me and Jeff are the only comedians. And he's like, you know what, dude? Because the crowd was all standing room only and they were rowdy. They've been day drinking all day. And he's like, and he's from Chicago. So he's like, hey, I'm going to go out there first. I'm going to calm them down. I'm going to bring you up, make you look like a rock star. That way they respect you. And he goes up and he gets a huge pop. He's from there. They all know him. He's famous. And he's like, all right, guys, we're going to start things off. I got a comedian from LA, really funny guy. And this one dude's like, bring up Guster, and the whole room roars. Yeah. And he looks at me. I'm on the side. He's like, I'm sorry, man. Like, went out there. And then I, which I didn't know at the time, they recorded that set for a radio show. So that that set was on the radio. And my dad, it was the first time my dad had ever heard my stand-up. My
Can you hear God. The guy on the...
You know, it's funny. I have it and I haven't listened to it. Really? Actually, during the pandemic, I got really into...
I thought you did listen to it.
I got really into downloading bootlegs. Yeah. Like from bands that I like. And I flew way too close to the sun and I found bootlegs from that whole tour with all my sets on it. And I listened to the one where I got booed. I didn't listen to that one. I should though, because I think that one hurts the most because at the time that was the one that I know my dad had seen. It's like there's a trigger in it. You yeah. know?
My dad was at my worst. Oh, man. I saw his face during it. I'm like, oh man. It was where I got like booed by that guy. It wasn't the Vic Theater, but it was Borough Bar and Grill. They just shut down.
Oh, fuck yeah. them.
This makes me happy that I don't band. Have a dad.
No yeah. one to disappoint.
Yeah, yeah you really. Can disappoint someone that doesn't exist.
Man, just watching him back there, just be like, God damn you just it. See him just so hurt. But then I find out, this is how nice he is. He's like, I'm not going to lie. He's like, when that dude... And they were saying that stuff. He's like, I wanted to get up and beat their ass.
Yeah, I love that. Oh,
thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
Thanks, because it looked like you hated me.
Yeah, but yeah.
That's nice that you wanted to fight them. Hell yeah.
I think my worst bomb, was, I do a joke about this now, too. I got asked a headline. I'd never headline. It was before Kill Tony. I got asked to headline at Disability Comic-Con.
Oh my
and
God.
I didn't know what that meant. I just thought it was like wheelchair people. And I was like, Slay, I got wheelchair jokes, yeah. you know? And I was like, does it have to be clean? And they were like, no. And I show up right before I went on to do 45 minutes. I had about 20. Okay.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, it does have to be clean.
Oh, no.
And I was like, the fuck? You know? And there was no one in a wheelchair. Everyone was a furry.
No.
What?
The Which disability is a different type of, was so they were autistic. Autism. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. And I'm up there like, fuck, you know? And so I'm trying to do my material, but like change it in the moment to not be dirty. Silence.
Which is crazy because furries are like, have like a very dirty side to them.
Yeah, we know why they're there.
Yeah.
We know what their thing
well,
is.
Well, yeah. They wouldn't laugh at literally anything.
Well, yeah, because they have their...
They can hear me through the fur. Right. Yeah, it
was, yeah.
No, but they, I tried to do crowd work to be like, let's get to know each other.
Yeah.
And I was like, does anyone like comedy here? And like collectively at the same time, they all go, no.
Oh, no.
And I was like, very cool. Love that for me. And then... I just did a Q&A.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just wanted to know about my wheelchair. Yeah, but they wouldn't make eye contact.
They just wanted to know about your wheelchair?
Yeah. They were like,
how does it work? How many speeds do you have?
Yeah. Yeah. Can I press that button?
Yeah.
What was real funny is at the end, because they're all autistic, this guy comes up wearing like a costume or whatever. And... She's like talking to people or taking pictures afterwards. And the same guy comes back in like five different costumes to keep getting hugs from her.
Because he like, didn't well think
sounds like so, yeah. one of my fans, actually.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
My fans are all very autistic. Yeah. There's like a crossover between Jackass and
the dude treated you like a snack at Costco.
And before this ends up on some Jackass Reddit, I don't think all of you are autistic. Just. Most of you. Yeah.
All like right. Well, I think that's about
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I think that was great.
Before we head out and cut this, why can I not talk all of a sudden?
Yeah,
God bless.
Plug your social
yeah, please plug your stuff.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When
I'm
is
at,
this
at Rachel Wolfson on Instagram.
Yeah, I'm at Matt Edgar. Come see me on Warped Tour.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's going to be sick. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And you got any dates you want to
plug?
No,
I'm just chilling locally right now.
Okay, cool.
I know that makes me sound like a loser. Yeah. I just got done with being on the road, so I'm chilling for a while.
Oh, it is summertime.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. There's the Red Room, Hyenas, Fort Worth on August 30th.
Hell yeah.
Please.
Amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, and this should be out in like 2 weeks, three weeks.
Lovely.
So, awesome. Perfect. Guys.
Well, thank y'all so much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, y'all rock.
Hell yeah.
And thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah, appreciate anytime.
All right.
Our casa, su casa.
Hell yeah. All right, that's a wrap. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see y'all next week.
Shut up.